Podcast, live and underway here on ESPN Plus. Alongside Hercules Gomez, I'm Sebi Salazar. And what did we see off the top there? Was that a... just the fan with the worst luck in the world? He's a Buffalo Bills fan and a Cruz Azul fan.
How are you doing? I know you're a massive Buffalo Bills fan. I'm sure you must be fine, dandy. You even came in Buffalo colors today. How are you holding up?
Buffalo wears orange. Okay.
Good to know. Orange? Good that looks to red. Know. That looks red.
Well, we got to get the lights adjusted in here because this jacket is definitely orange. I'm very disappointed, Herc. You know, I'm not a huge fan anymore of the American football. I grew up a big, big Bills fan. I expected a lot more against Cincinnati. I was nervous about the game against Cincinnati, but I didn't think it would go like that. It was like being a Cruz Azul fan, and it happened at home, too.
Yeah, you know what? Biggest losers weren't just the Bills. It was the NFL because... that game, they win it. They play in a neutral site with Kansas City. It would have been taking a page out of soccer, neutral site venue for a championship game, and that would have been some major dollars right there for the NFL. So they lose out on that.
Wow. Wow. The Buffalo Bills letting everybody down again, including our friend there who was at Orchard Park rocking his Cruz Azul gear. We got a lot coming in this edition of Football Americas, which, by the way, is episode 215 of this show. Paxton Aaronson, Herc. Is going to join us from January camp. We're going to recap a weekend that was very good for both Americans and Mexicans in Europe. We are only three games, Herc, into the Liga MX season, yet already producer Beto is ready to push the panic button on quite a few teams.
Not his team, but quite a few teams.
No. Speaking of Liga MX, we also have the groups for the League's Cup coming up this summer, so we'll pick a group of death out of that. And we'll also look back on the U.S. women's national team who concluded their trip to New Zealand with a big win. But, Herc, let's start with a shakeup at U.S. soccer. That's right, change at the Federation. ESPN's Sam Borden reporting last Friday that Brian McBride will not return as general manager of the U.S. men's national team. He was reportedly out of contract, this after becoming GM back in 2020. Sam also reporting that while Greg Berhalter is still a candidate to return as manager, it is, quote, increasingly less likely that will happen in light of the fallout from the Berhalter-Reyna family scandal. Herc, Brian McBride out. Is this the right move by U.S. soccer?
I don't know. Can I be honest? Seb, I say this with the utmost respect for Brian McBride. I don't know what Brian McBride did at U.S. soccer, what that GM role really entails. You have Ernie Stewart there. So unless it's something we don't know about, a breach in protocol or something else, because is it really sporting? There were two goals set out for this U.S. men's national team, qualifying and getting out of the group, and they did them both. So where did it go wrong for Brian McBride? I don't know what his day-to-day duties were unless you're just an ambassador for club teams, from club team to the national team. And you're just making trips, making phone calls. Where did it go wrong? I don't know. And I say, with all due respect, I don't know what he did.
Right. This is not the right move, Herc. This is a nothing move. This is a meaningless move. Brian McBride, to your point, is literally the middle man here, right? Ernie Stewart is above him. Greg Berhalter is beneath him. Ernie Stewart runs the show. Greg Berhalter is closest to the team, right? And if we specifically talk about the scandal that U.S. soccer finds itself in right now, Greg Berhalter and Ernie Stewart are much closer to that scandal than Brian McBride.
Is it because of the scandal, though? That's what I don't know. That's what I, because I would be led to believe that there was a breach in protocol somewhere, and it's because of the scandal, but that could be the only reason you let go of him, right?
Well, that would be if it was a firing. This reportedly is the end of a contract and a contract not being renewed, okay? But to me, this is a sacrifice. This is a, we know the fans, we know the press want blood right now, so we're gonna sacrifice the middleman. And to me, that's just pointless because you've got the guy who admitted to domestic violence and the guy who unnecessarily took the call from an enraged mother, which led us into this scandal. That's Greg Berhalter and Ernie Stewart. If they're still fit to be in their jobs, I don't understand why we're getting rid of Brian McBride. And to further your point about just how important this position is, If you believe the reports from the Associated Press, we have no reason not to believe that. They report that when Ernie Stewart told the board that Brian McBride was not going to return, he didn't tell them if he would replace Brian McBride. I don't even know if we're going to see a replacement for this position, because we don't know really what this position does. But if the one thing that you mentioned that Brian McBride might do is what his actual duties were, we should probably give him credit. Because you pointed out when the January camp roster dropped, you said, boy, look at all these clubs around the world when they don't usually release players, especially a club like, I don't know, Middlesbrough in the championship in the middle of their season, or Eintracht Frankfurt with a Paxton Aaronson in the middle of their season,
who has two games sandwiched into this January camp.
So those clubs, without having to, seemingly respect U.S. soccer enough to give them their players in this non-FIFA window. So if that's the one thing you brought McBride in to do, he seemed to have done it well. You have a great relationship, apparently, with clubs. Certainly, if you compare it to the relationship FMF has with, like, Porto, Sevilla, anybody who Tecatito's played for.
Yeah, yeah. Even then, sacrificial how? You just mentioned that they just let him walk away. They just said, you're not welcome back, so to speak. They didn't fire him, so I really don't see where the sacrifice was. I go back to
because
not
the
knowing
fans
what the
will see it as a firing. The media will see it as, look, McBride out, McBride out. That's what people
fans,
want. People want to see blood after a scandal.
I think the fans are smart enough to be like, who else?
Right.
Who else?
Who's next?
Who's next? Mm. I think the fans are smart enough to realize that. I don't think anybody in their right minds thinks this is just something that's sporting related or
right.
his actual job. So there's more to it.
So let's assume that the fallout then isn't limited to McBride, or maybe let's not assume that. What do you think this decision about McBride tells us about what's coming with Greg Berhalter and his future with the national team?
I just don't see how there's any way U.S. soccer can retain Greg Berhalter after everything that we know now, after him admitting domestic violence, and there's the thought process out there that was 30 years ago. He was 18. It's fine. I'm not for this cancel culture. I understand that thought process. I can get with, in some way, the psyche of, okay, it's still domestic violence and sponsors aren't down with that. And at the end of the day, the bottom dollar is the sponsor. And U.S. soccer, who's been in just litigation with their own players for the better part of a decade, to have this also, this stain on them, that's not a PR event they would like themselves. Listen, I was against Greg Berhalter for sporting reasons even before this drama, this incident, this saga came about. I don't see how they can retain him now. If anybody can convince me otherwise, please go ahead, because I see no probable way.
Again, according to Sam Borden in the report, increasingly less likely that Berhalter will be back. This can't be good for his candidacy, that's for sure, because it does feel like maybe, even beyond Berhalter, U.S. soccer may be getting ready to clean house. All right, so Brian McBride, a part of the national team's past for now. What about its future, Herc? A big name, a special name, has been linked to the U.S. head coaching job. Jose Mourinho, that's right, is reportedly high up on U.S. soccer's list of candidates to potentially replace Berhalter. This according to The Sun, take it for what it's worth. The 59-year-old has never managed at the international level. Though he has expressed interest in it, he is currently at Roma in Syria. Herc, what do you think? Is Jose Mourinho a realistic target for U.S. soccer?
I actually said this was my possibility when you did this exercise about mm-hmm. your dream coach, your possibility, and your security blanket.
And I said you were crazy. I said you were crazy because I thought it was a reach. I thought it was a dream.
Now,
but you had it in the possible category.
Now check this out, okay? This is a very pragmatic coach who's won everything. Everywhere he's been, he has won. The U.S. men's national team pool has players that can do well in a pragmatic system like Jose Mourinho himself deploys. The thing here is, does he have any desire to actually go to the U.S. men's national team? Well, maybe he does. Production producer Beto, can we pull up the quote? Because this is Jose Mourinho, okay, not long ago, talking about this U.S. men's national team setup. I see myself coaching a club team. Coaching the national team, helping develop soccer in the U.S. When I'm tired of winning things in Europe, not won too much in Europe lately, it's something I want to do. I want to coach the Portugal national team. Well, he denied them just recently. And I want to work in the United States. You can have that. You can have your cake and eat it too with this U.S. men's national team. A 2026 World Cup. Jose Mourinho. that setup, that system. And what's best? You could be damn well sure he's not gonna be answering the phone, picking up overbearing parents' phone calls. Mm-hmm. None of that. And also, there is a sector of the fan base, and maybe some players, who think that certain players are untouchable. And maybe they are. Hierarchies exist in world football. I understand that. But Jose Mourinho comes in that door, everybody is on their heels. Ears are perked up, and nobody is safe.
So I love it. I love it. If it's true, if Ernie Stewart is really making contact with guys like Zinedine Zidane and Jose Mourinho, even if they don't come to manage the national team, it's good to have those conversations. It shows a lot of ambition here for U.S. soccer. As far as whether it's realistic, Herc, currently he's at Roma. Mm-hmm. He's got a contract at Roma through 2024. But let's be honest about Jose Mourinho, especially if we look at his more recent jobs and how they ended. I'm talking about Spurs. I'm talking about United. I'm talking about Chelsea the second time. Yeah. One, the jobs last around 2 years.
Yeah.
So he's coming up on his 2-year anniversary here in the summer with Roma. And two, he talks his way out of them, and he talks his way out of them quick. So Roma right now, right in the Champions League race, I think they're fourth in Serie A. Let's say they miss out on Champions League. He goes ballistic in the spring, talks his way out of it, and he's a free agent come the summer. Are you willing to wait until the summer for Jose Mourinho?
I don't think you have to wait till the summer for Jose Mourinho. Reports were that the Portuguese national team were actually willing to let him coach Roma and do the Portuguese national team in FIFA fixture dates. I think you could easily do the same in the meantime.
Okay.
In the meantime, until you work out a compromise gearing up to 2026. Listen, U.S. soccer literally was willing to lose 13 months with Dave Sarakin at the helm to let Greg Berhalter coach the Columbus Crew. You think they're not going to let Jose Mourinho coach Roma? If they want to, they being U.S. soccer,
yep,
and Jose
yep.
Mourinho is willing to do both at the same time, it can happen. I see no reason why not. This is still Jose Mourinho. Listen, you said no to the Portuguese national team. There's a reason for that. It's just because you don't want to be the guy who has Cristiano in those later years, that transitional period, or is it because you don't want to coach national team right now? It's a different game.
You mentioned Berhalter. You were very critical of Greg Berhalter's style and the way his teams played.
I was critical
as
of style.
The national team manager.
No,
yes.
No, 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 no.
You always criticize the style,
no.
The way it
the
looked.
The execution.
Las formas. They have this golden generation. He should be getting more out of them. Are you okay with this golden generation playing Jose Mourinho style? You going to be okay with that, and you think American fans be okay with that?
You are insane if you think Jose Mourinho is a step down for this U.S. men's national team pool, because that's how you're framing this question. If you think Jose Mourinho isn't good enough for this U.S. men's national team
stop,
pool.
Stop. You clearly misunderstood the question.
No,
then.
I understood
Let
the question perfectly.
Let me ask you this. Do you have a problem with the U.S. playing the way that Jose Mourinho loves to play with his ultra-talented generation of young players? You got a problem with it?
Ask the question one more time, because I want you to listen to yourself when you're just... I have no issue with this U.S. men's national team, these players playing that way. Because Jose Mourinho is by far and away the most talented person ever associated with the U.S. men's national team set up as a coach. That's just a reality. Look at everything he's won. That's a reality. As a coach, nobody's resume comes next to us. And we're talking about very few in the world you can match up next to him. Now, if you want to apologize or retract what you just said,
style doesn't matter. Formas don't matter here on Football
Americas. If you want to, I will give you one chance to retract that.
Hercules does not care about how the U.S. men's national team plays.
Oh, my goodness.
All he cares about is results. Respect.
I would take it back.
Respect.
Respect me.
All you want is results.
Respect,
you don't care
Sadie.
How they play. You love Berhalter ball. That's why you wore the shirt back in the day, isn't it?
I have the shirt, by
That's
the way.
That's right. That's right.
It's a collector's
Look at
item.
You. All right, let's move on. To Gio Reyna, speaking of, who was a 70th minute sub for Borussia Dortmund in their 4-3 win over Augsburg on Sunday. And indeed, it was Reyna's goal in the 78th minute, Herc, that ends up being the game winner.
It's a good goal. I'm not going to lie. It's a ridiculous goal. The touch sets it up perfectly for the just volley, the overhead volley, or not overhead, the volley into the side netting. Goalkeeper maybe gets a finger on it. It's a ridiculous goal. And then look at the celebration, the celly.
His third goal of the season, already more than last season. And the celebration there, very similar to Memphis Depay. Why is that interesting? Well, you remember this Greg Berhalter quote after the U.S. crashed out against Netherlands in the round of 16. Quote, we don't have a Memphis Depay right now who's scoring in the Champions League. All right, Herc, what do you make of Gio's celebration? Is it shots fired at Berhalter?
Yeah, I would love the production could put up the celly again, because it's not just the Memphis Depay. He's covering his ears. He's doing the talking sign. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of moving parts to that celebration. So I don't think it's just a shot at Greg Berhalter. I think there's a shot for Greg Berhalter. Absolutely, Memphis Depay. I also think it's a shot at anybody who is questioned, him, or the Reyna family. That would include Claudio and Danielle Reyna recently. Anybody who had an opposing thought about the Reynas and their involvement, I think this goes for you as well. Not only Greg Berhalter. So yes, shots fired at Greg Berhalter, absolutely. But if you took issue with the Reynas, Gio himself, or the Reynas in this saga, shots fired at you as well. And you know what, Seb? I've got zero issue with it. I have no problem whatsoever with this, because this is the only way he's going to make people forget. One, with goals and assists, like I told you. And two, that's the mentality he needs to have. Me against the world. Us against the world. When I play, I have to do this. The great players have that. Now, it's got to be a better teammate. I think everybody is in accordance with that. I think you would say that's true, right? But if you have an issue with this, I don't know what to tell you.
Yes. Gio Reyna scoring for Borussia Dortmund, an absolute golazo. I think this is actually probably as much evidence as you need to why Greg Berhalter can't come back, right? Because of how toxic it is that whether this celebration was directly aimed at Berhalter or not, we're talking about it. And that toxicity, that rift between Reyna and Berhalter, I don't know how it would ever be washed away until these two are separated, no longer working in the same national team camp. I love the fact that Gio is turning this into motivation, and Dortmund might be able to use him. You know, he gets the game winner here. They're six right now on the table. They're not far from being, you know, right behind Bayern. I think they're 7 points back of Bayern right now, but they're 1 or 2 points away from being second in the league. Still, Dortmund could use a boost. They could use a spark. And Gio Reyna could be the guy to deliver that spark if he's playing as he did right there. I don't know if you saw the celebration, Herc, because it was like fully drawn out, right? He first goes over and he does the talking,
yeah.
And then this,
yeah.
And then the teammates kind of get him. But then he walks back over to the supporters, back over to where the cameras are, and does just the Memphis Depay. Read into it all you want. Don't read into it all you want. Seemed like something about Memphis Depay if it wasn't about Greg Berhalter. We shall find out. Maybe someday there'll be a tell-all book. Let's run it back. U.S. men's national team are scoring goals. Gio not the only one. Josh Sargent, his 10th of the season.
My man got
Norwich,
10 goals already?
They won 4-2.
10 goals already, Sammy?
10.
Maybe he can play as a 9. Maybe he can play as a 9. Unbelievable he doesn't play as a 9.
Norwich up to 5th after their victory over Coventry, looking good in the championship. Ricardo Pepi with an assist, his 3rd of the season, as Groningen lost 3-1 to Heerenveen.
All right. I never got this type of an assist. Like, my man, I don't know if he meant to pass it, but he meant to be dangerous.
That's a Football America's assist there, huh? Real assist here, Kevin Paredes, the pride of DC United and Bethesda Soccer Club.
Look at that, Kevin Paredes, first Bundesliga assist. I just gave out a Kevin Paredes signed jersey, and if you guys are good here at Football Americas, I'll give out another one. I'll make sure he gives out another one.
Wolfsburg, 6-0 winners over Freiburg on the day. Follerin Balogun, you've heard of him, could play for the U.S., England, or Nigeria. He's got another goal for Reims, who won in the French Cup.
All right, this is unfair. He's not committed yet. This is just making people, like, really, really want him.
11 goals in 19 games played so far this season. Another multinational. Play for the U.S. or Mexico, Alejandro Zendejas with a golazo, Herc.
Dios mío. An assist before this, and then this golazo. The technical ability here on Fleek.
First of the season for Club America, and of course, Zendejas called into January camp.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Speaking of January camp, the U.S. team is in Southern California ahead of not one but two friendlies in the L.A. area. Wednesday, it'll be the United States against Serbia from BMO Stadium, formerly Bank of California Stadium, home of LAFC. And then on Saturday, from the home of the Galaxy, Dignity Health Sports Park, it'll be the United States against Colombia. 24 players called in, 13 could make their senior debuts in the first games of the Anthony Hudson era. For more on camp, let's call on somebody who's actually there on the ground in Southern California, Paxton Aaronson, formerly of the Philadelphia Union, now, of course, of Eintracht Frankfurt. Paxton, welcome to the show. Great to have you here on Football Americas.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, happy to be here.
All right, so give us the vibe. What's going on in this camp? I mentioned 13 players who could make their senior debuts, plus we got a new coach, so a lot of new faces. Describe to us what y'all are up to.
Yeah, I think, like you said, a lot of young, hungry guys trying to make a good first impression on the new coach. But I think it's a really talented group of a lot of new faces, which is sometimes really good because they bring a lot of hunger. They bring a lot of ambition, and they're always kind of pushing the level to try to make that good first impression. And a lot of guys can make their senior team, including me, debut. So, yeah, I'm just really looking forward to it. And hopefully I can make that impression to make my first cap.
Paxton, big European move, your first call-up with the U.S. men's national team. What are you feeling at this moment right now, this moment in your career?
Yeah, I'm feeling a lot of emotions, but the number one thing for me is super excited and super thrilled. You know, like you kind of said, a lot of things have been happening for me in these last couple months with the big move to Europe and now getting called into my first senior camp, but it's been nothing short of exciting for me. I'm a kind of player and I'm a kind of person that loves the challenge. And yeah, it's just been great for me.
All right. So if this last name sounds familiar, it should. He is, of course, the younger brother of Brendan Aaronson. I'm wondering if Paxton, Brendan gave you any advice before this camp and generally kind of what your relationship is like. Is he a mentor? Is he a rival? Like, what's that like?
No, he's for sure a mentor. Yeah, it's always nice just getting to bounce ideas off of him. Always just communicating after his games, after my games, just always asking questions. And of course, I called him, texted him before coming into this camp. He kind of gave me the rundown of what to expect. But for him, this was a super important camp. This is what kind of kickstarted his national team kind of status, and he told me the same thing. This is where you can make a extremely good first impression, and if you do it the right way, this can set you up for a lot of success. And it's obviously a huge cycle for the U.S. national team with the World Cup coming here in 2026. So he said, if you do it right, this could set you up for a lot of success, like he did for himself. So yeah.
You know, I've heard your brother Brendan actually talk about you, and he actually said you're going to be better. I'm curious. I'm sure you've never heard people compare you two, but I'm curious from your perspective, what similarities, what differences do you see? How are you alike? What do you mentally and physically are in the game?
I think we obviously have a lot of similarities just because we were kind of raised in kind of crafted and molded to the same techniques, the same craftsmanship, because my dad was obviously our mentor and he kind of taught us everything we know. But I think obviously there's some differences between us. Of course, we're both like really quick with the ball. We obviously work and run a lot, but I think for me positionally, I think I'm more of a like true 10. Like I like to kind of stay higher up the field and kind of just get into those really good pockets where it's like I get the ball and then it's 1, 2, 3 touches and then it's a pass to make the killer pass. Brennan can kind of do it all, but he's also like a crazy workhorse, which I try to take from him. But yeah, there's definitely some similarities, definitely some differences, but yeah.
All right, clearly we have to credit Mr. Aaronson, right? He's the mentor, but we should probably also credit the Philadelphia Union Academy.
Yeah.
Because it's not just the Aaronson brothers that are coming out of the Philadelphia Union Academy. First question, Paxton, is Philadelphia Union the best academy in all of Major League Soccer? And if it is, why? What's going on there?
Of course, I have to back my hometown club. I think in recent years, it for sure has surpassed a lot of the other academies, and I think it for sure could label itself as the number one. But of course, there's other fantastic academies that have produced top players, like the likes of FC Dallas. They're always a big part of, you know, developing young guys, and they've done a great job. But I think recently and over the last several years, Union has for sure made that push to claim at number one. What they've done, the recruiting processes they have done, and how they've handled me, but a lot of the other young guys coming up through the ranks, it's been truly incredible. And I mean, I saw it firsthand, the way they handled me, the academy guys like Richie Graham, who run the program at the lower levels, who run the school, just the setup they have really sets young guys up for success. And that's what you've seen over the last however many years.
You know, our studios here for Football Americas are in Los Angeles. There was a big game in LA, Philly versus LAFC. I want to know a few things, Brendan. One, have you recovered from MLS Cup? And two, what, if anything, did you learn out of that? Because it was so chaotic. One of the best games I've ever seen when it comes to an actual final in Major League Soccer.
Yeah, for me, that game was heartbreaking. It was a crazy game. Like you said, a really crazy experience for me, being so young, but being able to, given the opportunity to play in such a high stature game in the MLS Cup final, where some guys, you know, maybe don't ever get the chance to play in the final. So I was so grateful to play in that. But there's always some things that you can take away. I mean, they obviously, LAFC, have world-class players, so there's only so much you can do. But I mean, just closing out the game, but I mean, there's a lot of things you could have done maybe in the moment, but at the end of the day, it panned out like that. It was obviously heartbreaking. And of course I wanted more for the guys, for the Philly fans, but I have no doubt that they'll be back and that they'll bounce back, because they're a group of really hardworking guys, great coaching staff, and I have no doubt that they'll be back.
What an experience it must have been, Paxton. Speaking of experience, this won't actually be your first time with the national team, your first time with the senior team, but we know you quite well from the youth national team ranks, especially this under 20 team that we kind of all fell in love with last year. Tell me about this U20 squad, because you guys were not just good in CONCACAF, you were dominant, and I don't think we've really seen that before.
Yeah, I love those guys. I love that team. Really, truly, when I go and play with that team, I enjoy every second of it, on and off the field. Being coached by Mikey, the assistant coach is Sean. I really, truly enjoy every moment of it. And playing the way we do, playing the style that we play, it's obviously super enjoyable for me. And the tournament I had, of course I had a good tournament, but I think the team around me and what we did set me up for all the success I had in that tournament. And I'm looking forward to hopefully being named to that U20 World Cup roster. And yeah, I think we have a really talented group, and I think we can do big things in that.
The U20s, the Olympics coming up. You were obviously voted the best player in CONCACAF at that U20 level. You've seen this group, which was the best team at the U20 level. Give me a name, maybe a name that people haven't heard, don't realize, that you think is going to have just a ridiculous career. Maybe a Jack McGlynn, somebody of that nature who...
Can't pick yourself.
Well, you can't pick yourself. I actually thought we'd see Jack McGlynn here in this January camp, but I'm sure they're saving him for that U20. Give me a name.
I mean, I was going to say number one, Jack McGlynn. Another one, Alejandro Alvarado. I think he's just one of those guys that kind of goes under the radar because he's not the one that gets on the score sheet or makes the killer passes all the time, but he does the dirty work for the team that sometimes goes unnoticed, but that every team needs. You know what I mean? When I was playing, just having him kind of winning the second balls, winning those tackles, being that kind of guy is so crucial to a team. And he also has the end product, which is amazing. And Jack McGlynn, of course, he's like my best friend. So he has tremendous amount of talent. I mean, a crazy left foot, crazy IQ, on and off the ball. So, yeah, he's going to have a tremendous career.
Paxton, before we let you go, I got to ask about the big move to Eintracht Frankfurt. One, why Eintracht Frankfurt? And two, what were the other options? What else were you considering?
So I'll start with why. I mean, Eintracht Frankfurt kind of came to me from the very beginning. And once they kind of told me the plan that they had for me, they were only the really club that I had in the back of my mind that me and my family were set on, just because how they approached me and how they kind of handled my situation with the recruiting they did for me and how the plan that they gave me, you know what I mean? How they told me that I fit into their system with the 2-10s they play. It was just nice to hear, and it just felt like they really wanted me and that they had a plan for me for the future. And they were just a top club, obviously Europa League reigning champion. So getting the opportunity to go to a club like this of this stature, it's only going to make me better, a better player, better person off the field, and learning from guys like Mario Götze every day in training. It's just going to increase my level. And yeah, I'm just looking forward to, you know, just learning from these guys and just, yeah, taking it all in.
Obviously, you want to take it all in. You want to learn. You want to get better. But Paxton Aaronson, what goals does he have for himself? Where do you see yourself? What do you want to achieve?
I think it starts with this camp. Wanting to achieve my first cap for the national team would be a dream come true. Getting that good impression, like I spoke about, because this is a very important camp for a very important cycle. And then back at my club, I think I had a 10-day preseason in Dubai. That was really good for me. We had two test matches against Leipzig and Lech Poznan, a Polish team, and continuing to show what I can do, continuing to show that I belong at that level, and then slowly chipping away to make the roster, then slowly chipping away to make my first team debut, and then maybe it's my first start. But slowly chipping away and becoming the player that I want to become, and then making an impact at the top level.
All right, there he is, Paxton Aaronson. Good luck Wednesday night against Serbia, and good luck this season in the Bundesliga with Eintracht Frankfurt. Great to have you with us on Football Americas.
Thank you guys so much. It was a pleasure.
Kirk, what do we call him? Mr. Football Americas Junior or what?
No. What a nice guy. This is the type of player you like to root for.
Absolutely. There we see his heat map from his time in Philadelphia. Paxton Aaronson about to potentially make his senior debut with the U.S. team in January camp. All right, Herc, you know what they used to call January camp?
What?
Camp Cupcake. Oh, can you believe that?
They still call it that.
The disrespect.
Yeah.
But we should point out that every once in a while, maybe even more than every once in a while, you find something good in January camp, something real good. So what we're going to do now is Herc's top five gems of January camp for the U.S. men's national team. Herc, why don't you start us off at number five?
Bear with me, all right? Number five, Matt Turner. Come on down. Got his national team debut in January camp. Never looked back. Same year, he started six games in the Gold Cup. Got five shutouts. One of those, 1-0 win versus your beloved Mexico in that final in Las Vegas, Nevada. You were there, Seb. You remember that. You were also, Seb, in Qatar. In Qatar, where he posted two shutouts, something that's not been done by a U.S. men's national team goalkeeper since, I think you were like 1930. So, big time right there. That's number five, all right? Let's go to number four. Oh, number four is a good one. Everybody's favorite GM. One of my favorite teammates. One of my favorite center backs in the U.S. men's national team setup. Carlos Bocanegra. Center back and left back. Over a decade's worth of experience in Europe. Over 100 and something caps. What do you got? 110 caps with the U.S. men's national team. One of the best left foots that you will see from a center back. A really good player and one of the original Captain Americas. That is our number four, now GM of Atlanta United, Carlos Bocanegra. He's number four. Number three, Jozy Altidore. Can you believe it? Jozy Altidore was a January camp product, also at 17 years of age. This is crazy. There are only two individuals with more goals in a U.S. men's national team shirt than Jozy Altidore. That would be Clint Dempsey and Landon Donovan. Jozy Altidore, from that January camp, made one of the best forward careers in the history of the U.S. men's national team. And yet we will still think he could have done more. Imagine that, how high that ceiling was and how high his playing career was. Number two, Clint Dempsey. I'm going to quote the great poet, Bruce Arena. He tries shit.
Can we say that?
Yeah, we can say that. Yeah, okay. I got the okay. He tries shit. That's really what it was. Discovered in January camp, he tried his brown emoji and he made it work. One of the most creative players you will ever see, probably ever see, in a U.S. men's national team jersey. It's Clint Dempsey's goals, assists, the flair, the closest thing we have or have had to Mamba mentality. Maybe Gio Reyna's next on that one. And number one, I had to make this a tie. Let me tell you why. Landon Donovan and DeMarcus Beasley at the hip, youth national teams, made their way up together to that January camp. And then from there parlayed it into a 2002 World Cup tournament. One where, yes, Landon Donovan maybe had more of the play and more of the flair, was voted the best young player of the tournament in the 2002 World Cup, scored that infamous goal against Mexico, that 2-0. You were there. You were, what, 15, 18 maybe?
At I wasn't that there, but I was watching.
You were there in Espirito. But it's what they did afterward. Obviously, Landon Donovan with Clint Dempsey, leading goal scorer in the history of the U.S. men's national team. And if not for Koba, if not for 2018, DeMarcus Beasley would have 5 World Cups. Think about that. These are my top 5 gems. I'm sure there's a lot more out there. There's the, what's another one? Pablo Mastroianni is a good shout. Matt Beasler. Clyde Sims I wanted to put in there for the great story that it was. USL to U.S. Men's National Team in the January camp. Go Google that, you young crowd out there. But there's some definitely shouts there.
The work stoppage, the strike, remember that? Of course.
Yeah. DC product for you as well.
DC United, yes. Yeah. Played for Richmond.
Carlos Llamosa as well, he's another one.
As well. So Clint, Landon, and Donovan, all from the time they played in their January camps, played in a World Cup within 18 months. Pretty impressive. Matt Turner, who was on your list, 22 months. Yeah. From literally making his debut January 21 to starting for the U.S. in the World Cup. The quickest out of everybody is a name you haven't mentioned yet. DeAndre Yedlin, back in 2014, got his first cap at the end of the January camp. And 6 months later, Herc, 6 months later, was playing in the World Cup for Jurgen Klinsmann and the U.S. men's national team in 2014.
That's almost as impressive of not playing in a January camp and making a World Cup.
You know who else was in January camp back in 2011? Tim Ream. Tim Ream and Anthony Robinson and Fulham will face Sunderland and Lyndon Gooch, speaking of Americans, Saturday in the fourth round of the FA Cup. The FA Cup, of course, available exclusively on ESPN+.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Speaking of, the Mexican national team on full display this weekend on ESPN+. The Clásico in the Eredivisie between Ajax and Feyenoord. Feyenoord with Santi Jimenez on the bench.
Oh my God, what a cracker.
Taking the lead in the 34th minute from Igor Baixao. 71st minute.
Oh!
Edson with the assist.
Oh, no! You gotta reward that. Reward that beautiful pass.
Almost assist from Edson Alvarez. El pase filtrado.
Listen, man. I had Edson Alvarez as my best defensive midfielder in CONCACAF. It's a dead heat right now with him and Tyler Adams. I gotta be honest.
Ajax eventually does find their equalizer. Davy Klaassen getting the credit.
You remember Klaassen, World Cup? I can't believe he's like the starting number 10 there.
Late chance for Feyenoord. Santiago Jimenez for the win,
oh,
save!
No, Edson let him go inside. Don't let him go on that left foot. Edson got bailed out by the goalkeeper. Look at Santi.
Let's hear from Santiago Jimenez after the game.
No, yo creo que estos partidos los vives desde que te despiertas, desde la semana pasada, porque se siente todo el rigor de toda la afición, de querer jugar este clásico, de que solo tienes que ganar este partido. Y la afición nos contagia a nosotros los jugadores para dejar todo en la cancha y tratar de sacar el resultado. Pero sí creo que es un ambiente muy bonito y se notó cuando entramos a la cancha, se te pone todo piel de gallina. Sí, no, obvio. Siempre el delantero quiere ese tipo de oportunidades, esos mano a mano. Y bueno, esta vez no se dio. Creo que en otros partidos se ha dado, pero hay que seguir trabajando para que el porcentaje sea mayor en ese tipo de jugadas.
Santiago Jimenez off the bench, Edson Alvarez, Jorge Sánchez starting and playing the full 90 in that one. Meanwhile, in Serie A, duelo de mexicanos. Another one, Chucky Lozano's Napoli against Memo Ochoa, Salernitana.
Oh, no.
Both in the starting lineup. Memo with two saves, but it wasn't enough. Napoli won 2-0.
Yeah, like, is there a better team right now? Forget, like, Italy and all of Europe than Napoli and how they're playing. And then is there a just worse defense than Salernitana and what they're showing? Oh, man.
Hey, at least Memo's getting work. Lots of it. Lots of saves.
Yeah.
Napoli 12 points clear in Serie A with the points deduction to Juventus. Tough times for Memo Ochoa. We got some history, Herc. Andres Guardado playing in his 300th. That's right, La Liga match this weekend as Real Betis fell 1-0 to Espanyol this weekend. Guardado started the match. So did Cesar Montes, Herc, who played the full 90 in Espanyol's win.
We've not done 300 shows. This man's played 300 games. Give me a break. Like, he's played 300 games in La Liga. One of the absolute best national team careers. Forget for Mexico, just in general, all of CONCACAF. Look at Cesar Montes. Get stuck in, my friend.
Betis, sixth in the table. Espanyol, 13th. After Espanyol's 1-0 victory. La Liga, of course, on ESPN Plus, and our coverage of the Spanish top flight continues on Sunday with Real Madrid against Real Sociedad. Don't miss it. Coverage starts 3 p.m. Sunday on ESPN Plus. All right, let's move to Liga MX. Pumas president Leopoldo Silva has announced the club will be terminating Dani Alves' contract. Alves has been charged with sexual assault and has been ordered by a Spanish judge to be held without bail in Barcelona, where the alleged assault occurred. Alves has denied any wrongdoing. Herc, what do you make of Pumas' decision to terminate Dani Alves' contract?
Yeah, it's the correct decision here. Dani Alves was detained without bail. There's no coming back, at least in the meantime, to even fulfill those sporting duties, even if Pumas wanted him to.
Mm-hmm.
He's since changed his statement, or asked to change his statement for, I believe, the fourth time.
Hmm.
On this program, just in general, it's good practice. We tend to not question victims, right? There's a due process, a legal process that he needs to go through, and Pumas needs to allow. I don't see how Pumas could even think of bringing him back with just what's out there. What Dani Alves himself has said, the information that's available to anybody who wants to Google and research what's going on, and just in general, what Dani Alves himself is going through, he's got bigger fish to fry than fulfilling this season with Pumas. So Pumas did the correct thing here for the institution, for the university, for their brand, for their sponsors, just in general.
Yeah, I'm with you that it's the correct decision. For those that don't know, you know, Pumas is not a standalone organization. They're linked to UNAM, which is a very prestigious university in Mexico, perhaps the most prestigious university in Mexico, one of the most prestigious universities in all of Latin America, an institution of higher learning, of education. When you couple that with what Pumas is as a football team, Herc, I think the onus there is even higher. They have a greater social responsibility, if you will. Do you think another club, a club that maybe wasn't linked to a university, would have waited and stuck around and find out? Or do you think that this would have been a decision that was made any club in Liga MX? Or do you think Pumas is unique in that regard?
Unfortunately, that's where we're heading here. Is where, well, Ibarra at Club America was in a DV situation, domestic violence situation, and he continued to play for America, and then he went to Santos. And Joao Malek, while at Santos, they brought him into Santos, I should say. You know, he's now playing, or was playing, Liga Expansión, so there are elements within Mexican football where players continue to play after everything. It shouldn't be about that, because these things have happened. It's unfortunate that we blur the colors and you become set into this fandom. Well, America did it. Well, Santos did it. Well, Atlante and Club de Expansión did it. Or Tepa did it, whatever the case may be. It shouldn't be about that.
So one of the things that has come out in the documents is Dani Alves' reported salary with Pumas. 300,000 euros a month. So that's about 3.6 million a year. That's big time money for Liga MX, and it's certainly, Herc, we know, big time money for Pumas. As far as terminating the contract, I'm wondering if they're not almost relieved if they can get out of this and if they can save some money, because this has been, even aside from this horrific allegation, a disastrous signing for Pumas. You want to talk about a big time bust? I would be shocked if Pumas isn't scrambling right now to their lawyers and saying, hey, can we get any of this money back? Can we get any of this money back? Because that money could go a long way for a club like Pumas.
Well, not the money's already earned. That's gone. That's in Dani Alves' pocket. That's not going anywhere. Future monies is where they're concerned, because this contract was rescinded, so that means they don't owe it. There's no severance there. You don't owe him anything there. It's out. So in a contract, when you're with a prestigious organization, like ESPN or like Puma or whatever the case may be, there are certain clauses, morality clauses, clauses where if you cause the company or the name to be seen in a different light, an embarrassing light, or a light like in this morality clause can come in, that comes into play. And they're not legally bound to have to pay you. That's the situation we see here with Pumas.
All right, enough on Pumas. Let's focus in on another one of the grandes down in Mexico. Chivas, Herc, who, in case you missed it, have debuted a new tradition, a giant horn. What do you think of this?
Oh, my goodness. I guess it's the best thing of their season I've seen so far.
Oh, Chivas. A club with so much history, and yet they need a horn. Shout out to Bofo Batista. Chivas playing Toluca over the weekend. 31st minute. And how about that? Chivas opens the scoring against the team you picked to win it all, Herc.
Yeah, keep going, Seb, because it's a goal, and it's an own goal. And it is against the team that I picked to win it all, who actually happened to win this game, Seb. So
okay.
How did they do it?
Relax. Woo. Wait till the end of the highlight. Woo. Don't blow it for everybody.
What a shot.
Piojo Alvarado, they're ripping it off the crossbar. Shout out to Nene Beltran, who made the play on the own goal.
How about that one? Wacho Jimenez, this is an insane save.
Yeah, you talk about revelations of the season early on. Wacho Jimenez, decent so far. Carlos Gonzalez, they're making it 1-1 in the 60th.
Yeah, a pair of goals already in this season. Two goals for him, gets up there. And look at John Meneses. Meneses right there to Charlie Gonzalez. You thought this was going to go in, Seb, right?
With my anti-Chivas ways, you know I did. But don't worry, Toluca would get their game winner. Camilo Sanveso, Marcel Ruiz, the kid, go on.
Yeah, that's Toluca's version of Jordi Cortizo. How sick are these jerseys, by the way, for Toluca? Woo-hoo-hoo.
Toluca, the come from behind 2-1 win over Chivas. What about Cruz Azul taking on Necaxa? Pick this one up in the 14th minute. Long ball. Edgar Mendez 1-0.
Yeah, that's Funes Mori's brother right there, just getting absolutely bodied. La Ley del Ex, ex-Cruz Azul player right there, putting that one away.
Cruz Azul's Carlos Rotondi here. The shot just wide. 3 minutes later, Hugo Gonzalez with the first save. Shaggy just misses wide.
I mean, that's got to go in. Shaggy, gas it, Shaggy.
Second half. Antuna with the dangerous ball across. Ends in nothing. And Necaxa ends up with 3 points. 1-0 over Cruz Azul. America Puebla at Azteca. 24th minute. Zendejas couldn't quite make the play later in the first half. Diego Valdez with the shot denied. Still first half. Zendejas across. Henry Martin off the pitch, off the chest hurt.
Hey, Zendejas with a good ball in and just a goal scorer's goal. Just gets his chest on it and I'll flex on him. I'll allow it.
Zendejas active here. Anthony Silva, big stop.
Yeah, one of the few bright spots for Puebla. Anthony Silva, another massive stop right there.
Just before the half, Puebla keeping America from adding a second. Here's your equalizer, Gaston Silva.
A dead ball again. And oh, Zendejas. How pretty was that, Seb?
Oh, beautiful. Happy about that call-up, you think?
Yeah, he's motivated. Goal and an assist for Zendejas. And look at this one. Ooh.
Could have been 3-1.
Feeling wasn't himself.
Zendejas denied by the post. Puebla would get a late one. Emmanuel Gularte with the header. 2-2 the final as America still winless on the season. All right, Herc. Chivas are 8th in the table. America 11th, Cruz Azul 17th. Who should be hitting the panic button hardest?
All right, on paper, I think everybody say Cruz Azul. They're 17th out of 18 teams, right? But if you saw that game against Necaxa, they had 70% possession. I think it's crazy they ended up scoring. They had a ton of chances. A man down versus Monterrey last game. I'm going to let them pass for a second, right? For right now. Let me focus on Chivas, okay? And why Chivas and not why America? I've seen this from America before, and I think they're going to lift their game. They've got the pool, at least. Chivas is a club that was already limited to begin with, and their biggest scoring threat, if not their only scoring threat, was Alexis Vega. They have 2 goals on the season, one of which Alexis Vega scored before he got injured. The second one is an own goal. They have no punch. They actually, versus Toluca, surprised me. They get in and around the area. It's actually penetrating that area. It's actually being dangerous, that final sequence that they are missing. Ormeño's out. They don't want him. They could use him. They don't want him. Jota Macias is just coming back right now. Who knows what he's going to be like after that ACL injury, if he'll be anywhere near his best. And if he can translate that best that we've not seen in the Chivas uniform for quite some time that we saw in León, today, you've got Cisneros, who's not really that forward. You don't have that big scoring presence like you did with Alexis Vega. And the next 4 games, while on paper it looks easy because it's Juarez, Querétaro, Pachuca without Nico Ibáñez, and Cholos, it puts even more pressure on your team because you're supposed to win those games right now that you don't have Alexis. And if you don't, what's it going to be like when you have to play the big boys? I think this is a team right now with Paunovic that's got their finger like just above that button, ready to press that alarm.
All right, you go Chivas. I'm going Cruz Azul. I'm going Cruz Azul. And to be fair, I've had my doubts about Cruz Azul from when the season started. Remember when we did our which coach would get fired first? I was between Bucetich, the manager of Rayados, and who's Potro Gutierrez, the manager of Cruz Azul.
Okay.
Okay? I went with Bucetich. But I wasn't really convinced about Cruz Azul. One, the way their season ended last time around. In the quarterfinals, they got destroyed by Rayados. They didn't even show up. They didn't even show up, especially in the home leg. Okay, so I didn't have a lot of confidence coming in. Then there's all of this off-the-field stuff. They were late registering players, which is not unheard of in Liga MX because of the way that the transfer window sits in the season. but it's not ideal. We had the Uriel Antuna situation, clearly wanted out, didn't get his sale. We have the Cata Dominguez situation, which is still playing out. Remember the pictures that we showed you a couple weeks ago? Legendary player for Cruz Azul got himself in some hot water. I just don't like how things are going for Cruz Azul right now. I don't feel like there's a good vibe around the team. And then, Herc, I look at the schedule. Their next two games, Tigres, Toluca in Liga MX.
Yeah.
I mean, Cruz Azul has some big worries, right? And very urgent worries right now, correct?
They do. And to add on to your vibe of Cruz Azul, El Potro Gutierrez, the head coach of Cruz Azul, was just on record talking to the press, calling out studio fans. So, like, these fake fans that seem to be circling the team and constantly criticizing. Cata Dominguez was served a four-game suspension for that unfortunate party that he threw for his son, that narco-themed party. He only served three. So that internal suspension, they couldn't even implement themselves. So they are
internal suspension.
Yes, they are at the moment not doing quite well. But this is a team, and I'll go back to use Chivas, that has just more of a pool, more players. And the producers in my ear, why not America? Because I've seen this from America before. This is America that we saw last season. Last season, the only difference here is last season they were struggling at the beginning, but because it was sandwiched with these friendlies versus Manchester City, versus Real Madrid, Chelsea.
There was a ready-built excuse. Yeah.
Right now, they've lost points in two home games, but they've also not lost. So there's something to be said about that. And America's got more just to play with. I think Chivas right now really depends so much on Alexis, and they really need to pick up points when he's not around because they need to make up points when they get there.
I don't love how America's playing because producer Beto, who's a Chivas fan, is in my ear. I don't love the start. I'm close to the panic button. I'm not as close as Cruz Azul. I'm probably not as close as Chivas. And the bottom line, because Herc always says it on this show, whenever we talk about America when they were playing well in the regular season, what, Herc? It doesn't matter. America will be judged on Liguilla. So these first three games mean absolutely nothing for Club America. He said, hopefully. Let's talk Leagues Cup, Herc. Because Liga MX is going to have to take a break. So is MLS for Leagues Cup this year. 15 groups of three we're going to have in this 47-team tournament, which is set to start on July 21st, run through August 19th. We've got four groups in the East, South, and Central regions. We've got three groups in the West region. And then we got LAFC and Pachuca, who get a bye into the knockout rounds, which will start with the round of 32. Herc, of all these groups, which is your group of death?
Honestly, it's very difficult to find a group of death because I'm not just trying to pick like two teams. I want three teams that make sense. But let me give you the closest that I found with some very good narratives is Grupo Sur Tres. So that would be Atlanta United, Inter Miami, Cruz Azul. In that group, you have Atlanta United with Gonzo Pineda that's going to be on the hot seat this year. Newly placed President of Operations Garth Lagerwey with that big checkbook, oftentimes a blank check, if you know what I mean. And there's a transfer window before this tournament kicks off. Something interesting could happen there. Inter Miami, David Beckham, and that team that splashes money around with Joseph Martinez that used to play in Atlanta United. Oh, and guess what? Cruz Azul, one of the biggest fan bases, most historic teams in Liga MX. Who knows what that transfer will look like for all these teams in play. This could be a very interesting group before the tournament even kicks off.
Blank checks. Look at those dad jokes flying from Hercules Gomez. All right, so I went with West 2, Herc. I went with West 2, which is your beloved Seattle Sounders, Rayados of Monterrey, and Real Salt Lake. Now, I know RSL looks like the weakest of the three in there, but let's not forget, RSL was in the playoffs last year and was in the Western Conference Final back in 2021.
So who's the weakest?
Well, I'm just saying, Seattle Sounders didn't make the playoffs
last
year.
Who's the weakest?
RSL is the weakest,
okay,
but they're not weak. They're not weak. So I think Rayados, Sounders, RSL is a very difficult group. Another group that I like, West 1, Tigres, Portland, San Jose. You want to talk about narratives, interesting storylines?
You said San
I like
Jose.
The matchups.
You said
I like
San
the matchups
Jose.
There.
You Though don't like we San did Jose? Interview Luchi Gonzalez, and he was very good in his interview and very, very honest about their current situation.
But you still don't respect San Jose, just to be clear. Okay. There it is. In case you missed it, Hercules Gomez. Inter Miami in preseason mode, and they got CONCACAF. They lost 3-0 to Brazil's Vasco da Gama on Saturday. But the real story is La Familia, an Inter Miami supporters group, walked out in protest after four fans were ejected from Miami Stadium for setting off pyrotechnics, which are banned, Herc. Are banned per stadium rules. Joseph Martinez also presented to fans halftime of this game. But there you have it. Inter Miami.
The loneliest number that you'll ever see. What do they want? Like, there's no pyrotechnics. I'm going to show them. Let's go. Let's just leave this preseason game that we paid our money for. That'll show them.
U.S. Women's National Team facing off against New Zealand for the second time in 4 days last week. They got off to a great start. Her 22nd minute in, Ashley Hatch with the tap-in.
Who did that outside the foot flick? That was dirty.
Ooh, it was Sanchez to Rodman to Hatch. A little Washington spirit thriller there.
Look at Sofia Huerta with that ball on a dime. Look at this, Seb. Just Roosevelt right into her path. Ah, you got that.
Lavelle makes it 2-0 in the 39th minute, 53rd minute. Mallory Swanson, yes, Mallory Pugh as we used to know her,
pew,
makes
pew,
it three.
Pew, pew, pew. Still on target, if you were wondering.
Mm-hmm. Still got it. 74th minute. U.S. looking for a fourth. They find it. Lynn Williams to Rose Lavelle.
Yeah, I know it's close range, but it's a tricky finish because it's in that juncture, that in that area where you don't know if you got to finish it with your hip, you got to go knee. She gets it in, her second of the night.
Then with 10 minutes to go off the corner kick, Taylor Korniak, big target, big goal. 5-0 to the United States as they beat New Zealand for the second time in a row. Post game, let's hear from Rose Lavelle and Vlatko Andonovski.
I think this was a really, really good test run for us. I think it's really valuable to be able to come here and get a feel for what we'll experience when we come back in 6 months. Even just experiencing the travel between group games and I guess the whole tournament. But yeah, I think it was really good for us to like know what to expect when we come back.
Rose said, this is a great test for us, and I can speak about test on the field as well, because we started the second half of last game to connect certain lines, certain players and the lines, and it looked good, and we wanted to see that a little bit more in this game. And I think this game we were more consistent and more concise from the very beginning. Even though we didn't score more goals, I felt like we created a little better opportunities in this game.
All right, Herc, so everybody was up in arms saying Seb's too harsh when he gave him a C+.
Were you not?
For the 4-0 victory over New Zealand in the first game of the calendar year, 5-0 in game two. Did we see improvement?
Yes, you saw improvement. The finishing ability was a lot better. You didn't see as much lackluster finishing as you saw in the first game. There's still a lot of question marks. And I understand the value of these games. The 24 player called up, about 14 of them will be debutants in a big tournament. I'm talking about an actual Olympics or World Cup, a big tournament. Only 10 of them have that experience. So while it is important to get them together, I ask what the value is of playing the same team twice in the same week, and a team like New Zealand, 6 months away from a major tournament, still a lot of question marks. Julie Ertz, how do you fix the center of the midfield? Mm-hmm. Sam Mewis, what's going on there? That mystery. Rose Lavelle, can she be a functioning operative eight at that level? It looks good when you're playing against teams like New Zealand. You can go in advance, you get into these spots, you can score those goals, but there's still so many questions for a very inexperienced group.
The value here is not the competition, for sure. You're right on that. It's not New Zealand. It's the trip. It's everybody getting a chance to make that journey. It's the Federation officials being able to see, you know, where the pitfalls, where the problems might be when they get there in the summer. That's the value of this trip. Herc, certainly they improved, and that's all you want to see in a World Cup year. You want to see improvement from game one to game two. To your point, the finishing was far less wasteful. They get their first goal instead of waiting till what, minute 53 or 54, they get it 22 minutes into this game. And by the way, it's Ashley Hatch, who wasn't supposed to start this game. Alex Morgan was supposed to start. Hatch kind of comes in late, gets the goal, so that's a positive sign. We're seeing the goals from Rose Lavelle. My goodness, her performance in this certainly gives you something to smile about. Generally, the midfield performance, which we really pointed at in the 4-0 win is problematic, was better here. And I think, Herc, a lot of that has to do with Ashley Sanchez. I continue to be impressed by this player. I don't know what the solution is, Herc. I don't know what the solution is in midfield. Because to take Lindsay Horan out or Rose Lavelle out, I don't really think that's an option in terms of getting Ashley Sanchez on the field. But if she doesn't need to start, she certainly needs to play more. We see her make such a difference, not just with her plays, but the way the team moves around her, Herc.
Yeah.
It's just so much more fluid. This is a player that needs to be on the field.
It's much more dynamic. The first goal, it started off with the flick of the foot, knowing, anticipating, knowing that your player is going to be in that space, playing it, and then being available again because she trails in at the top of the box. It really is that third man running that next level movement, that next level thinking. But you're right. The center of the midfield right now is the biggest question mark I have with this U.S. Women's National Team, besides the inexperience, how they would do against the better teams in a tournament.
Another player I think is starting to come around, and we'll leave it at this, Trinity Rodman.
Yeah.
Okay, we've seen her dominate the National Women's Soccer League. We've not seen her be the same player at international level. I think, again, to your point, it's New Zealand. It's not elite competition, but I think we saw her on this trip start to look a little bit more like her NWSL self at the international level, and that could be huge for the U.S. Women's National Team in a World Cup year. Speaking of the NWSL, Herc, we got a big, I mean big trade involving U.S. internationals. Racing Louisville sending Emily Fox to the North Carolina Courage in exchange for defenders Abby Erceg, who's a New Zealand international, and Carson Pickett, who you remember was a recent U.S. call-up. Erceg on social media saying that she was, quote, shocked and disappointed by the trade and said she wanted to finish her career in North Carolina. But there you have it, a big trade in the National Women's Soccer League. Emily Fox heading to the North Carolina Courage. All right, that'll do it for this edition of Football Americas. He's Hercules Gomez. I'm Sebi Salazar. Programming note, we are not back on Thursday this week. Ojo. We are back Wednesday night after the U.S.-Serbia game, live post-game reacts. Should be right around midnight Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific, because the game is a 7 o'clock start out there on the West Coast. And we will be live right here on ESPN Plus in the aftermath.
But don't they record at the same
of the U.S.
We don't care. Okay.
Against Serbia. That's right. Go head-to-head with the rights holders. That's the attitude here on Football Americas. We'll see ya Wednesday night after USA versus Serbia.
Unlucky, Shah.